Good afternoon, and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. My name is Justin. I'm a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. I'll be hosting this portion of the show today, and I'm very pleased to be joined by another monk, Jen, who is fresh off the plane from Africa, only been on the ground for a couple hours here, and is here to tell us about her trip. Hey, Jen, you there?
I'm here.
All right.
I made it.
Yeah. Well, having had the experience myself, I can kind of imagine what your body is somewhere way out over the ocean, I bet you, at this point.
Yeah, it's not quite sure what time zone, but we're doing okay so far.
Uh-huh, I bet.
The flight is so long that it gives you, I always figure somewhere in there you'll get enough hours of sleep.
Yeah. So we got 10 minutes, and I'm dying to know a whole bunch of things. I think probably the first one is, I've heard you often say in the past that the trips, they tend to have, each one has a particular theme.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that happened this time, too, and if you might kind of tell us sort of what the theme of the trip was.
Yeah, it definitely did. And it's funny because we always go there with not so much a theme in mind, but with a content for sure in mind, sort of what's the big next step.
Uh-huh.
And the big next step in this trip, of course, for anyone who's seen the blog knows, was the pilot English program for preschoolers.
Uh-huh.
And so I can talk about that a little bit in a minute, but absolutely there was a theme that emerged, as you say, that always does, that was unexpected. And I was looking at it just today on the plane, and the word that comes up for me is taking responsibility.
Taking responsibility.
And deepening practice. And it sounds like I'm making that up because it fits so well with what's going on in practice in general. But it truly, I mean, over and over I had the experience of, this is remarkable, the parallel tracks that we're on with the program in Cantaloma, the projects there, and what's going on in practice. Again, for people who have read the blog, you know now that out of the blue, right before I left for this trip, Teresa contacted me and said, hey, will you bring as many of Mama Sherry's folks, they call her Mama Sherry, as you can with you, because to make a long story short, we had given them, I suppose, a few books years ago. I don't even really remember doing it, but and several of them had read them, and through a course of events, they're really, really interested and suddenly got curious about what are these books about and picked them up. The depression book was the one in particular, and really started to read it. And so they're very interested in what is meditation and what is practice and that sort of thing. And that dovetailed with a conversation that I had with the leadership group. There are the folks who really speak English and have a little bit more education under their belt and really help steer the project. I mean, these are folks in Cantaloma. And several conversations that we had amongst ourselves of how can we really move to the next phase of, it's the folks in Cantaloma who are taking responsibility not only for the day-to-day project, which they're always doing. I mean, we don't do any of that. They make all of it happen. But how can they also take more financial responsibility, for example, of actually making the project happen? And that's a huge leap, of course, because, you know, no one has any money and that's not where the resources were and that sort of thing. But just realizing that we really are at the point where they're in several areas, we're ready to really take the next step of making these income-generating projects potentially into small businesses. And I'm not talking about, you know, next week this is going to make a huge difference, but we're really at a place where there's that energetic shift of, okay, we're ready for this, and we really want to take responsibility for the project. And it's just really fun that it's all happening in this year of deepening practice, where it feels like that same thing is happening amongst the Sangha here, of taking responsibility for our practice.
Yeah, it's like it all comes together in one place, doesn't it? Because I know there's been a tremendous amount of work, both like for just to take one part of that, like the financial part, sustainability. There's been a lot of work going on into that, both on the content level and on the kind of the process level. You know, trying to get these these businesses to a place where they can maybe take off and actually be businesses. But then there's also sort of the underneath that. Kind of, you know, how to take responsibility, how to kind of come from that place from which that can happen. And so there's those two angles on that. And then what I hear is, it feels like brand new is supporting that underneath is actually our practice in a tangible form in Cantalamba.
It's really amazing. You know, I mean, we've never talked about practice. We've never mm-hmm. brought it there in any tangible form, but just, yeah, exactly. They asked us for it, and they asked what meditation was, and we had this really fun discussion about it. It was informal in the sewing room just one day. And I said, you know, if you guys are interested, I'm happy to teach meditation. And so they all said, yeah, great, Friday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So a bunch of us got together, and we just, I mean, you can picture it. You've been there. We sat down on the floor. They have such great posture anyway, so luckily we didn't need 30 off of, you know.
They sit on the floor all the time.
Yeah, they sit. So we all just sat with our legs, you know, straight out in front of us. And you can picture it. They can sit bolt upright on their sit bones just like that.
It's amazing.
Oh, it's amazing. And so we sat. And, you know, I had no sort of desire to talk about it and debrief it in any way. I mean, I offered anyone to ask questions if they had questions. But no one, there was one question, I think, Georgina asked about getting sleepy and that sort of thing. But there was no big discussion about it. And then the next day, I said, hey, you know what? I think it was fun. Anyone want to come sit? And so a bunch of us did for just 10 minutes. We held silence in that same way. And I just have this sense of, I don't know, there's just a really big seed that's planted now that feels exciting.
Yeah, that's neat. There's a fantastic photo in the blog of Josephine. She's kind of sitting behind a sewing machine or something with the key.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's startling actually to see that.
Well, and imagine how startled I was when I walked in.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
That it's not planned. It's not with something like we're trying to like foist it on them or ask them to do. It's something
right.
It sounds like that's arisen out of just kind of their own curiosity and probably like for all of us who have encountered practice out of a need that they have.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, that is how it happened. There was, I feel like there's a privileged environment issue with it, so I don't want to give the details of the content, but there was one of the cooperative members had a very difficult piece of content happen in her family life. And she was quite depressed, almost, I think, kind of suicidal. And that's when the depression book was brought out. And that's how they all came around to it. So, yeah, exactly. And I just realizing, you know, we had this great discussion one afternoon about you can only be as happy as you can be. And, you know, how none of us would trade places with a person in the United States who has everything they could possibly ever want, and they're unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not an enviable position. They were joking, saying, yeah, you know, rich people can't sleep at night because they're up worrying about how to protect their money. But you see people in Cantalamba, they sleep 8 hours straight, no problem.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm aware that time's going by. Do you want to tell us about some content stuff?
Well, I just want to really give a really big kudos to Phil, who traveled with me and did a remarkable job on the preschool English program.
It looked like, I mean, not only was it effective, but incredibly fun.
It was incredibly fun. And it was a huge thing that we were trying to tackle. I mean, the pieces that had to get put in place to actually have it happen, I confess, leading up to it, I was not sure if we would pull it off. But I just kept having this sense before the trip that somehow it would just present itself. The really, really big wild card was who is the teacher and how
mm-hmm.
is that going to happen? Because really, there's no one on the ground to be the teacher there. And so the woman who ended up being the teacher, it really was life presenting itself. I mean, we were sort of starting to feel like we were getting down to the wire. And Teresa and Phil and I were driving home from Cantalamba one day, and not even sort of really intentionally doing it, I started to say out loud, all right, let's see, guys, what do we need? What do we need in a teacher? And we just all sort of listed it out. And as we finished, I said, that felt really good. I think we just told life very clearly what we need.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, the next 2 days were when people started to show up to interview. And this was the last woman that we interviewed. And after the interview, Teresa and I would look at each other at the end of the interview. I'd say, you first. No, she'd say, no, you first. What did you think? And I said, no, you have to tell me. She goes, I think that's the woman. And I just went, yes, she really, yeah. She's from Tuapia, which is the community right next to Cantalamba. So she's really local. I think she's going to be really great. So I'm excited that it all kind of came together. And it is an experiment. It's a pilot program. You know, we started with three-year-olds the first 2 days and then realized it needed to be 4- and 5-year-olds. So we switched that out. But it was really quite a process. And everyone there's a real sort of sense of possibility around it, because wow, to imagine that these children are going to simultaneously learn English and Bemba and be as comfortable in English as they are in Bemba, that's going to change everything about their future. And just, you know, one of the things, I know we got to end here, but that I was hoping would be accomplished by that is not even so much the content, which I'm excited about, though I know that's going to take quite some time. They're only 4 and 5 years old. But that it's really adding an energy behind the importance of English, and that really, really is happening. You know, we had that magic fence idea where the preschool is within this fence within the compound, and so when you walk in the magic fence, you know, you're speaking English, and everyone had that on their mind and would sort of make jokes about it and walk outside the fence to speak Bemba and that sort of thing. So I think it's going to be really, really good.
Yeah, that's good, and I have a feeling it's going to have kind of a ripple-out effect. You know, in kind of a fun way, those little, I mean, I've seen the pictures, you know, they're just gorgeous children. You know,
yeah.
those little ones are going to model that for the rest of the community.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, go home and speak to their parents. And one of the things we said to the parents who were sort of interviewing for it is, we really want you guys to be encouraging them. So if they come home and they're teaching you English words, for you to be really open to that and excited about that.
Yeah, it looked like a lot of the moms, I don't know if I saw any dads or not, I can't remember, but a lot of the moms were actually quite young themselves. And
oh, they're very young, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that there being like a little spark there that might kind of help them have the same interest.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, so it's really exciting, really, really fun. Yep, so it was a fabulous trip.
Sounds like it. Yeah, very productive.
Very productive, yeah.
All right, anything, any parting words?
Just visit the blog. I feel like we really gave all the details there. So if you haven't seen it, it's all up there.
Mm-hmm. Lots and lots of great photos and videos.
Yeah, those were fun. We had to keep them super short so that we could get them emailed out.
Yeah, but it gives
you
a little taste of being there with you hear everybody talking and the singing and everything. It's fun.
Yeah, and the good news updates for people who didn't hear the last two. I understand that the recordings did come through, and so you guys got to hear those. And I think that adds another fun dimension too.
We did, and we talked about, I actually don't know if it's happened, I bet it has, but we talked about putting them on the web also so that people could access them, you know, if they missed it in the show.
Yeah, great. And Teresa and Veronica learned how to, I learned how to, how to do recordings straight on her computer and email them back. Actually, they walked around, they wanted to all say hi to Mama Sherry, so they walked around with the recorder and then emailed that file to her. So I have my fingers crossed that that's going to be another way we're going to start to get reports from Cantalumba.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, they emailed it, I saw, from Cantalumba, which I'm dying to know about. I'll ask you later.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Justin.
Yeah, get some rest.
I will, thanks.
Okay, thanks, Jen.
Okay. Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, over to you, Michael.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Thank you, Justin and Jen. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
Good. They could have kept that up for the rest of the hour, as far as I was concerned.
That's funny. I had the exact same thought.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that.
I laughed at the end when Jen said goodnight. I thought, I bet she really means that. It's just hard to imagine how exhausted a person is after that kind of a trip. So,
yes.
But yeah, it's so exciting what's happening there. I actually said this thing to Jen in an email the other day that I can tell all of you because, you know, we have that kind of relationship. But there's something that we have known, and I think everybody who does retreats knows this. So a retreat goes from Saturday to Saturday, and till about Wednesday, there's this feeling of, wow, this really isn't working. These people are not with the program. It's just not gelling. You know, it's just not that big energy moving in the same direction kind of feeling. And then Wednesday hits, and there's this magical shift that happens. And suddenly people are on board. You know, it's gratitude day. Lots of people have breakthroughs and filled with gratitude and getting it and all of this sort of thing. And I said to Jen, I feel like we've hit Wednesday in Cantalumba.
Wow.
That suddenly everything that we have done has come together, in a way that is just has just catapulted those people and that project into this whole new way of being with their lives and with the world. And I think that their interest in practice demonstrates that. And I was glad that Jen told a little bit about that story because, I mean, it's true. The person that got everybody looking into this had one of those, I mean, if you heard it in a soap opera, you wouldn't believe it, kind of life experiences that just left her suicidal. And then for people to begin talking about, because those kinds of situations are not uncommon in people's lives there in the same way really difficult, painful, even devastating events are not unusual in people's lives here. And so to realize that there is a way to approach life other than just becoming more and more depressed and miserable, you know, it happened to all of us, and for it to be happening for them, again, what a shift in an entire orientation to life and to the world and to oneself. It's just, it's extraordinary.
It is extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like the person had the proverbial 2x4.
Yes.
Or sounds, or probably much larger based
yes.
on your description.
Well, and, you know, I mean, we are so privileged in this culture. And through most of the developed world that, you know, we know there are choices. You know, we know if things get rough, you can go see a therapist or you can, you know, you can join a group that does this or you can, you know, there are lots of things that are available to us if we get in a really hard spot. But to be in
yeah.
a culture where you there are none of those things, not only are none of those things available to you, you don't even know that those things exist.
Wow.
And now to know that they exist and to have people get that there are voices talking to them in their head, to get that they can turn their attention away from this story that is so misery-producing for them and that they can focus their attention on something different and that they can move their lives in the direction that their attention is moving, and that's, well, I mean, extraordinary. It doesn't even come close, actually.
Yeah.
Truly, it's like living in the dark and having no idea that there's a switch that'll turn the lights on.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean, you know, that their lives are unutterably miserable or that they're all miserable within their lives. They're not. They're extraordinary. They're extraordinary in their ability to show up and to be cheerful in spite of circumstances that we would all be jumping off a bridge if we were thrust into. And there are hard circumstances. You know, there are deaths of loved ones and there's losing your income or your home or things that people in this country can relate to easily. And then there's being in those kinds of extreme circumstances with no support, nowhere to turn. So I'm just so grateful that this shift has happened because I think that's going to be as big a change for people as having enough to eat. And it does fit nicely with the idea that first we have to get enough to eat and we have to feel safe and that sort of thing, those basic needs have to be met, and when they are met, then we start looking. Now there's some space to look at, some openness to explore what else is possible in life, and to know that they're at that place is just unbelievably thrilling.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Very fun. And I want to give a kudos also to the blog, as usual. Read it voraciously, and very, very moving.
And again, all of this as a giant thank you to the Sangha, who is making this happen. You know, yes, there are people who go there, and Jen and Phil have done just tremendous work and loved every minute of it and are completely exhausted as a result of it. But they would not be there, and none of this would be happening if it weren't for the people who are financially supporting and energetically supporting that program. So big thank yous there.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Wonderful. Sherry, we have some announcements.
Right.
There's a new email class with you, Sherry. It starts August 25th and goes through to September 18th.
Mm.
Resistance in the Spirit of Inquiry.
Yes.
Parts 1 and 2.
Yes. So for thank you for saying that 1 and 2. If people did the part 1, this is not a repeat. This is you've got a whole new class that you get to do, and if people didn't get to do the first one, then we have that part 1 lined up for you.
Fabulous. Can't wait. There's a Rest and Be Thankful weekend retreat at the monastery coming up August 24th through 26th. Walk in nature, attend an art or yoga workshop, join the monks at meditation, eat simple delicious foods, and allow your heart to open to the generosity of life. Take it easy and enjoy a weekend of tranquility at the monastery.
Hmm.
And, as you were hinting at last week, everyone is invited to the Golden Gate Bridge Walk on September 22nd in San Francisco.
Yes. Chance to support that project that we were just talking so excitedly about.
Yes, and as you always do, to celebrate all of us who contribute, those on this side of the pond and those on the other side, and it requires all of us to make it happen.
Yeah, it sure does.
And visit schedule.livingcompassion.org to read more or sign up for any of these events. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. Let's get started.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jim. Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, good. How goes it
good.
There?
Good. It's exciting to hear about all the big life going on in Africa. And I got the email today about the email course and the September 1 check-in for Modo. So I'm excited about that. Thank you guys for doing all that.
Mm, our pleasure.
Well, I'm doing the still doing the 30-day retreat around procrastination.
Uh-huh.
And the daily evening review sort of check-ins have been really valuable to kind of just sort of like you're saying with the Spirit of Inquiry, kind of be aware of what's going on. And I've noticed two things going on lately that kind of want to talk about. And one of them is one of the exercises is what are some of the aspects, or write about the aspects that want to do the project, that don't want to procrastinate. And then also when you're writing about that, the judge will come up. And then the other thing is just how, what I do to procrastinate. And it, like you, in one of your books, you talk about there's a negotiation process. And for me, it's kind of like last minute, so the voices aren't going to come in and try to talk me out of something until, you know, right at 7 o'clock, when it's time to 7:15, when it's time to sit on the mat or something like that. And then it's almost a state negotiation, like, oh yeah, I can do that. Like, this is just one little bitty thing. So it gets me right up to the edge where I don't have any more room. And then the thing that it usually plays on is checking in, and it's not just the checking in, it's like actively and endlessly and sort of tirelessly being available for anyone that wants to email me or text me. It's just had a non-judgmental spirit of inquiry about that, and what is that like and what's going on. And it's kind of to like, am I okay, or, you know, what, like, almost like, what, where do I stand with people, and especially with the women in my life, and but also like just coworkers and stuff like that. And it's especially powerful when I come in my apartment. So I've kind of shut out the outside world, and then it's like almost feels like, I don't want to put labels on it, but this desperation to connect that feels sometimes more important, again, without putting labels on it. And just want to connect, and I really envy like kind of like the stereotype of like teenage girls or soccer moms that are just back in their car out of the parking lot, and they're just on the phone and just da-da-da-da-da, like yabbering away, like that kind of, I've had connections like that with friends, and you just kind of talk about whatever's going on in life, and sometimes those conversations can weave themselves into deep places where you're, you know, it helps you get into the light room, and
yeah.
And so that, I miss that. And then the other thing about the aspect is there's this little boy, like not a day over four, and he has this Christmas morning attitude about life. And he's just so precious, and he's the one that thinks, oh, wow, that would be great if, you know, if we were able to do this, complete this project, that would just be so fun. And the image that I have of him is kind of standing at the edge of the doorway, holding onto the door seal, and just poking his eye around the corner, just like with this complete, like, Christmas morning attitude towards everything, just happy and grateful and wants to participate. And another thing that occurred to me, I was kind of like journaling about him as it occurred to me, is that he can only receive because he's just so little, and he's happy to receive, but he can't go cut a field of hay. I mean, he couldn't even reach the first step of the tractor. But that's just the place that he's at. He's just 100% receive. And, you know, if you ask him to carry a plate, you know, from the kitchen to the dining room, he'd be happy to do it. He may spill it, but he'd be happy to do it, not because he's trying to please, but he's just, that's Christmas morning, wants to participate in life. And one thing that made me really sad and kind of mad as I thought about it again was that some of the things that the judge says to him and that little boy, and he just doesn't need that. And
all right, before I lose track completely,
yeah.
let's get started, okay? So, first of all, I would say he doesn't just receive, he gives. He gives the most essential thing anybody can give. He gives unconditional love, excitement, enthusiasm, innocence, defenselessness, sweetness. I mean, he is where we all want to be all the time. Right? Now,
okay.
It's true, he can't drive a tractor, but that's why he has you. Right?
That's what?
That's why he has you.
Yeah?
So,
yeah.
And you're right. A huge part of your responsibility is to get between him and those hateful voices and to protect that innocence from, you know, we all know what will happen if those voices get at him. Okay?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's one part of it. Now, the part about you close out the world and you get into your apartment and then you want to connect. Now, I would suggest that what the real connection that you want is with him, with yourself. And so we have, of course, this incredibly groovy thing called recording and listening. And so you can connect with him via those same kinds of conversations that you imagine that these other folks are having. Okay? So, I mean, you can just talk with him. You can listen to him. You can You know, you can talk about the day, you can process everything, you can see what he's up to and what he's doing, and you can actually do things like let him help you cook dinner and carry plates around, and that's the relationship that each one of us is longing for. Out of that, out of the completion of that relationship, all other relationships become possible.
Okay. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So you've got the whole, you've got all the pieces. It's just putting them together in a way that really works instead of letting karmic conditioning try to pull it all apart, which is, of course, what its job to attempt to do to us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely have made a lot of progress, just not in the terms of insight, but I just read recently the what you practice is what you have, and the Don't Hate Yourself book, and just saw for the first time when we have an itch, we don't scratch it because that helps us kind of get through it. And I have sometimes had this intense itch in my eyeball or on my eyelid, and so that's helped me, like, you know, if I'll get a text right when I'm meditating, that happened yesterday, and the phone buzzed, and then I just opened my eyes instinctively, and usually that's when the voices say, "See, you already messed up, so now we can fudge." But I said, "No, you know, even though I've opened my eyes, you know, I can go back to meditating, and you know, so."
Yes, and this just occurred to me when you were talking about that a little bit earlier. I don't know if this is the case, if this exists, but if it doesn't, I think you and I ought to invent it, okay? And that is an app that is the equivalent of a vacation message on email.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Right? That says...
out of the office.
I'm away from my phone until, and then you put in the time when you finish meditating. And then you know that message is going out to people, and they know when to reach you. And, you know, if this is an emergency, text back and, you know, or whatever it is. And then, because, I mean, sure, it would be nice if we were all disciplined enough to just say, put that phone in the other room, put it at the bottom of your sock drawer until you're finished meditating. But it, as long as there is that pull, you know, that feeling of, yeah, but what if something happened? What if somebody really needed to get a hold of me? What if there was a, you know, and then, of course, the voices can play that against us. And so it would be lovely if we just had something that said to people, I'm unavailable right now, I'll be available at this time, and then everybody can relax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just along those same lines, the last thing I'll say is that a lot of times what the voices will say, especially if I'm like 10 or 15 minutes into the meditation, is, are you sure your meditation timer, like, surely you left the oven on, like, you forgot to set it right.
Right.
You need to check to make sure you set it right. And I've just gotten to the point now where I'm like, well, if I didn't set it right, in 30 minutes I'll surely know, because it won't go off. And it always does go off. Like,
yes.
But it's like right when I get antsy, then it uses that as, oh, well, you can stop your meditation just to check that, because that will stop your meditation for real. And so
I this is, so I have some OCD traits that meditation has pretty much, well, it has, it's completely taken care of over the years. And the way it takes care of it is that so with a situation like that, you have to be completely present when you set the timer. And that's one of the things that karmic conditioning does to us. It distracts us right at the moment. So you're not actually sure that you did it. But with mindfulness, you can say, okay, I'm setting the timer. There it is. Go. Timer.
Yeah.
And then it can't do that to you. So in that way, it's really supporting you. It's serving your practice, because it will require you to be more present and consciously aware in order to thwart it from sabotaging you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that a lot. Thank you. That's
that
really
good?
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you, Sherry.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Okay. I'll talk to you later.
I'll talk with you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jim. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Sherry. This is Sherry from San Francisco.
Hey, Sherry.
Hi.
Hello, hello. I'm
how's it
calling
going?
I love just sitting here listening like this.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, you know, as much as, you know, conditioning, you know, as always, it's like, what are you going to talk about? What are you going to talk about? But to just keep pushing that aside, and there's something, like today I was noticing people's voices. In a way that I never have before. I mean, I don't know. It's so, I was
so
just
like physical instruments.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Like I could, I was almost crying. It was so beautiful. Like just the different tones and mm-hmm. lyrical sounds and
cadences.
And I, you know, I saw so clearly that it's like, you know, how much of that must be available all the time, but conditioning is just constantly distracting.
Yeah, yep. It's as if, you know, if you go to the symphony and there's or a movie and people are behind you talking.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, after a very short period of time, everybody in the surrounding area is ready to kill those people. Right? Because the disruption, the distraction is just unbearable. And yet, the voice is going inside the head nonstop, and people not only accept it and accept the distraction, but think it's who they are and that it's them living. And it's actually the exact same thing as the person sitting behind you nattering away about nothing.
Yes. Oh, and you know, yeah, so earlier in the call when you were touching a little bit on depression, mm-hmm. and you know, I was so moved. You know, I have this history of depression in my own life, and really seeing like how that depression just, I thought that was life.
Yes.
You know, that
yes.
It's like because I hadn't experienced anything else but the clamor and clamor and clamor of voices and that depression of feeling anything. Until I came to this practice, I thought that was just what life was.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't know any better. So I'm curious. You didn't have any manic phases, just depressive.
Oh, good question. I think probably, yeah. You know, as soon as I said that, these voices came in and said, well, that's a lie. That's not, you know. I don't know. This is what happens sometimes when I try to think, which I'm so glad.
It's
happening right now.
It's so
I'm really
difficult sometimes, isn't it? We're training ourselves not to do that, and then we try, and it's really painful.
And I love that it's happening right now because this is my wonderful practice of just showing up, and I can see that this is one of the things that conditioning holds over me. Like if you just show up, you're not going to know, right? You're not going to know the right answer.
Well, the reason that I asked that question is because somebody just, I'll try to remember to get the name of the book because it did sound like an amazing book. This somebody was telling me about scientific exploration of creativity. And one of the things that they said is that manic depressive people tend to be the most creative people on earth. And the reason for it is that in the manic stage, there's tremendous creativity. And in the depressive phase, there is the ability to plod along and implement what was envisioned in the manic stage.
Wow.
So I thought, well, you know, a lot of people in our practice struggle with depression. I maybe because that's so much a part of my life, you know, people are drawn to somebody who knows their same experience. But I just thought, well, gosh, that's good news for us. You know, because
well, you know, and it is funny because now I'm suddenly remembering just last week, you know, half joking with somebody and saying, you know, am I bipolar? You know, because it's not for me. It's like it can happen within a day, like
oh, yeah.
20 different times. These like highs and then lows.
Yeah. So if you know, if people got it that the depressive states are ones in which it's possible to have the resources available for much for lower key activity. You know, so for instance, I'm working on writing another book. You know, well, being manic is not the time to write a book. It's just not. It's great for having the you know the clarity about what you want to do, but there's a lot of sitting around involved with writing a book. And when you're, you know, hopping with energy, that's not a good fit.
Oh, I love this. Mm-hmm. 'Cause what just clicked in for me, too, is I'm doing the 30-day retreat right now around following the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had noticed that when I was having these ups and downs, I didn't want to do certain things during the downs because I was afraid that my downer energy would somehow, you know, woo-woo California,
mm-hmm.
reach out in the universe or something.
Mm-hmm.
But following the schedule, I've been noticing that that's not true at all. I mean, well, I don't know what's going on with my energy, but what's happening is that it's like I'm able to just, you know, do the things that need to be done that come up when I'm in that high state.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that really puts, I love that. It puts everything, it's like instead to what, you know, my mind still often will try and tell me, you know, that there's something wrong.
Oh, right, of course, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
But it's like having this discussion and actually in my own experience of doing the 30-day retreat around following the schedule, it really shifts that, you know, it's like there's nothing wrong. This is just, it's a different landscape.
Precisely, yes. And if we talk about this in practice a lot, and it's really hard to get that there aren't any mistakes. So anything that is going on with me is the perfect thing to be going on with me. If I can shift my view of life to really to get that, then we are in the spirit of inquiry because this is what's going on. Wow, what is that? If it's either there's something wrong or this is proof that I'm all right, in either one of those, there's no exploration. There's no learning in that. So I either feel bad or I feel good. Not that I actually feel good, but I'm okay or I'm not okay, depending on the assessment. And if once we lose that, then we're in a place where say there's that emotion. Wow, that's interesting. I wonder about that. And it can be, it's not analytical. It's just I'm noticing. I'm noticing when that is there. And I'm noticing the beliefs and assumptions about it and how I view the world and people based on, and now I'm starting to be interested in a way that's going to actually inform me because I think all of these things are secret coded messages and we don't get it. So we're being sent hints, you know. Well, here's a piece of the puzzle. Well, look here. Here's another. Look at this. Here's a piece and we're not even noticing the pieces of the puzzle that we're being given because all we're focused on is a conversation about, does this mean there's something wrong with me, or am I okay?
Oh, yes. Oh, and I had the perfect that happened to me last night, where I woke up in the middle of the night with just extreme anxiety, and I immediately like, what's wrong? What happened? You know, blah blah blah. And then I was like, no. You know, and I picked up my recorder, and I just started listening to my recordings, and it happened to be some old ones that I hadn't listened to in so long. And as soon as I stopped the conversation about whether anything was wrong, I had almost the same experience that I had just sitting here on the phone listening, which was this like, wow, her voice is so beautiful. Listen to what she's saying. You know, it was like, it just was this whole new, different experience.
Yep. Yep.
that could have never come in if I had stayed in that conversation about, like, oh, my God, it's late. What am I going to do? What's wrong?
Precisely. And, you know, you'd never learn anything about anxiety, right? Mm. Aside from everything else, you would never, you know, you wouldn't. It's like, this is so interesting. I'm sound asleep. Now I'm wide awake, and I have all this energy coursing through my body.
Yes.
And if it really were anxiety, I wouldn't have to be looking for what I'm anxious about, right? So maybe it's not actually anxiety. Maybe this is just a lot of energy coursing through my body that seems to get stuck in my third chakra, and then it starts this conversation in conditioned mind that wakes me up, and now here I am. So you pick up your recorder, you're listening to that, you turn your attention to something else, and that whole experience falls away. Then you can even look and see, are those same sensations in my third chakra? Well, actually they're not. Huh, so I wonder what my attention was doing when I was asleep that made that connection that, okay. So now we're in a world that's interesting, much more interesting than there's something wrong with me.
Oh, I love this.
Kind of makes
I
you
better go
wake up in the middle of the night, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, in a way it does. And
yeah.
I'm so grateful.
Oh, me.
Thank
too.
You.
Oh, you are so very welcome. Let's
All
talk
right.
again soon.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Bye,
guys.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Sherry. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Isn't Sangha fun?
Amazingly
isn't
fun.
Isn't practice remarkable?
It is.
Yeah, it really it is.
It's all amazing. Sherry, I think I found that book. Would that be helpful to mention or not?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I found it's called Touched with Fire.
Nope, that's not it.
That's not it? Okay.
Uh-uh.
Okay.
No, this
okay.
was a single word title.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll find out.
Okay.
We don't want to sell books that are the wrong wrong book. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Let's hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Greta from Washington State.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is David calling from Hawaii.
This is Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
It's Rebecca from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Anna here from Yorkshire in England.
It's Ramita calling from South Carolina.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Todd calling from Canada.
2012 marks 10 years that Sherry and Michael have been doing Open Air. They have fielded thousands of your calls and archived hundreds of shows. In this year of deepening practice, we invite you to give a donation to support Open Air. Go to the Living Compassion website, click on the Donations tab, and make a donation of any size to the Zen Center, writing Open Air in the notes field. Step forward to be part of expanding the transformation. Lend your support today.
We're very lucky people.
We are very lucky people.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Good night.
Good night.
Hi, this is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software, for Macs and iPhones and iPads, and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
You are the light of the world.
beautiful song by Trish Bruxford Colligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection, moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
So, Michael.
Welcome. Yes.
Isn't technology grand? Somebody just texted me the name of the book. It's called Imagine.
Imagine.
Yeah. Now, the thing about it is, I can't guarantee the rest of the book. I can't guarantee any of the book. So that might be the only interesting piece of it. So don't run out and buy it on my account.
Got it.
Yeah.
Great.
Thanks.
And we have another call.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Jen in Pennsylvania.
Hey, Jen.
Hi.
Hey.
Are you getting packed?
I am getting packed, yeah.
Very good.
The voices said I was too busy to call tonight, but I decided to call anyway.
Yes, that's perfect. When you're too busy, that's the perfect time.
Yes, I thought so, yeah. And actually, I don't want to take a lot of time, but I lost a little of the conversation and sort of lost myself there for a moment. I'm sitting here petting one of my kitties, and I just found a little lump on my kitty, and we have another kitty that's gone through cancer. And so this all just happened as I was sitting here listening to the show. So I went through this whole, you know, should I hang up? I probably should hang up and go get really worked up and upset was probably what the voices were going for. So I've just been kind of hanging on, just breathing, and, you know, it's probably still good to stay on the call. And then after the call, I'll go and do whatever sort of research might need to happen and blah, blah, blah. But that was just what was just right here. So I felt like, whoa, well, that's just what just happened. So there
yeah.
you go. But,
wow, that's real life. And
yes.
You know, to me, the thing that I like to reassure myself with is if whatever it is, the kitty probably doesn't need a giant upset.
Yes, probably me freaking out is not useful to anyone in the situation.
Yeah.
So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was kind of my, okay, hang on, stay on the call, because, of course, the voices were just, hang up, you can't be on the call now, and, you know, this kind of, whew. So that's there, but yes, I'm packing and very excited and all the stuff coming up, but I saw this really neat thing today, and even though I was getting told, you know, no, you have to pack and freak out about, you know, going away and all that, I wanted to call. So I had a reflective listening call that was really helpful. I was seeing this thing that comes up a lot where I feel like I really want to help somebody. And I'm projecting, you know, I mean, of course, I know I can't really help anybody. It's all my practice and all that. But I'm projecting that this external person is really getting, getting pummeled by the voices and so wanting to help with that and all these things. And I felt like I really got that the best thing I could offer was presence. And then, you know, however it goes is however it goes, and that it's not personal, whether it goes well or whether it doesn't go well, that the best thing I can do for that person is to show up and just be as present as possible, and the presence is what has the best chance of, you know, offering the transformation that I might wish for them.
I couldn't agree with you more.
It was really exciting, and where it took me was some time ago, actually, I had called and talked to you when you had made the announcement of doing a little less teaching and kind of focusing more on writing and all of that, and I had shared that I was feeling like, no, Sherry, you have to, you know, be in my life constantly, and, you know, all these fears were coming up around it, and you had said, you know, okay, sit down and take a look at what you're projecting onto Sherry Huber. And I did some of that, but I don't think I ever called back, or if I did, it's gone for me now. But what I got to today was seeing that's one of the biggest things that I project onto you, and what has always felt, I've felt so separate from, because I always got information that Sherry just sees so much more clearly. Like, you know, I'll see something and I'll talk to, you know, to Sherry about it or whatever, but Sherry always just gets it so much better, and she sees this whole, like, she sees stuff that I just never have anything. And I don't know, but what it felt like today was, wow, I bet that is presence, that what I project is, I mean, I'm projecting onto you right now, I know, but you know that, like, you have such a, you are so steeped in a way of being that is in presence, that's what I feel. And of course there is a way that, you know, well, yes, I do know that place and I do have it, because that's the only way I can see it in you. It's just that, of course, you know, I haven't had as much experience or practice or whatever else, but it was so encouraging or something, because I felt like, wow, that's something that can be practiced, and that there is a person that is modeling for me what that is like, and that there's a way to live a life that is like that could be possible to have. And I don't know, it just is really beautiful and exciting and amazing. And I realized it took me out of that, like, oh, I'm separate and I'll never, you know, I'll always be apart from this quality and all of this, and just getting back to, like, oh, well, I'm all that is, everything is all that is. So even, I mean, right now, even if my kitty is not in my life at some point, and everything, you know, when I lose people or all of that, that whatever I'm projecting onto them is still there. And the other thing you said to me was, nothing ever dies, it just changes form. And I was feeling like, oh, because I can still, maybe now, you know, today it's a flower and tomorrow it's a tree, but I'm still able to project that beauty that's inside of me onto a different form, or I don't know. It was really interesting and amazing, and I wanted to call you because the voices were saying, you know, let's forget about this and never talk about it again.
Right. Well, I can see why. Uh-huh. And so here's what I would encourage you to do. I would encourage you to get your little recorder and get the archives of this show when it comes out, and record everything that you just said and listen to it really, really often.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I want to tell you something about, since, you know, you're busy projecting these things and you've caught on to the whole deal. I want to tell you the real secret to my success. Are you ready?
Okay.
When there really isn't anything wrong, when everything is acceptable, everything is visible.
Yeah, when everything is acceptable, everything is visible. So if we're in a place of something's wrong and whatever, then we can't see clearly.
That's exactly right. Because what we're focused on is what's wrong, which is not true. And so we're focused on an illusion instead of what's really there. You see? We're focused on a story, on a belief. Our attention is on maintaining a belief instead of being able to be present to what's there.
Yes, and it's like a cloud that's in front of what we actually could see or something, yeah.
That's exactly right. And so everything that becomes acceptable is a piece of that cloud that disappears.
Mm.
Yeah?
Yeah, that felt... Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, it just felt like maybe that was a tiny bit of where, like, relaxing around this person and how I so wanted, you know, all these things for her and to her to not have the, you know, whatever, all the voices and stuff. But I think it was some of that of, like, you know, this is her experience. Life is lifing life and, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
And it's going to go however it goes. And as much as I have a projection about what would be, quote, good or bad, you know, who the heck am I to know? It's going to go how it goes, and the best thing I could do is show up and just, you know, be present.
Love her unconditionally and know that she's perfectly fine perfectly adequate to her life, that everything is going that's going on is her best opportunity to see what she needs to see. And when it's all acceptable to you, and it can be on that kind of blanket level, you know, you don't have to accept every detail of her life. You don't have to know everything that there is to know. You can just know her adequacy. And in being in that place of knowing that, you can see things that surprise you, that you can see. And the most important thing in terms of a relationship with someone else is that, in this case, she can feel your acceptance. Mm. And that opens a possibility for her to find acceptance for herself.
Yes, and I feel like that's so, I'm so grateful. I mean, and then I'm like, I know I'm projecting, but I just appreciate that you and the monks and the privileged environment and the whole thing, I feel like that's what is modeled, and that's probably exactly what has been so transformative about this practice for me, is that I can feel that. I mean, I came into this practice definitely thinking I was not okay and I was not adequate, and I seem to have lots of evidence that that was the case, but I never got that message from anybody in this practice. I got a lot of support, but it was also, you know, support that I was adequate, and it's just so beautiful, and I just thank you so much for modeling this, because I feel like this is, it's just amazing that it's possible for a human being, and it's the direction that I want to keep practicing toward without some standard, and I just thank you for showing us what that could look like, I guess, you know.
Well,
you're
very welcome. Thank you. And so I'll tell you something that you'll relate to. I was actually in a Pilates appointment, and I was watching two people do an exercise that I have not been able to do. And what happened for me in watching it is that I could feel my body learning it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's an experience I know you know. And that's exactly what we're talking about on a mental, emotional, spiritual level. The same thing happens. When we see somebody who is at center, we recognize that, and it enables us to, what we're doing is having that experience ourselves. That's how we project it onto somebody else, right? So you're at center, and I'm around you. You're in a place of realization that there's nothing wrong, that everything is perfectly fine, exactly as it is. We're all where we need to be. We're all adequate. It's all life-lifing, as you say. And so that you're in that place, and I'm with you, and I can feel myself moving into that place. I'm actually changed in your presence. And it's not that you're giving me anything. It's that I'm recognizing in seeing you what it is in me that I'm looking for.
It just felt so beautiful, because that's what I kind of got to, is like, yes, that's what you're doing when you're teaching us, is you're helping us connect with that, and it's already inside of us.
And so,
to think it's not.
And so, right, that's right. And you're recognizing where it is in you.
Yeah.
And if you were in a place of being concerned about me, it wouldn't matter how much you loved me. If you were concerned about me, what I would be getting in that same intuitive by osmosis way is, oh, God, there's something wrong with me.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
That you. Yeah. That's how it would feel. Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of work is for me then, because when you said about the, you know, the visibility with things becoming more acceptable, I see that I have a big place around. I mean, it, I don't know if it feels unacceptable, but I feel. I so want to like bite so hard for anybody if I'm projecting that they're in the voices and be like, no, it doesn't have to be this way and you can go another direction. And I do feel really sad to think, I guess I know that maybe some people are never going to see about the voices and know that there's another option. And that feels kind of borderline unacceptable or at least really sad to me, you know?
Here's the thing about that for me.
Okay, and
yeah.
Then I will stop and use it. Sorry. Yes.
That, well, I think this is a fascinating conversation, so I'm happy we're having it. So if all of those things are true, everybody is completely adequate, everything is perfectly fine, we're all where we are. So somebody asked me at one point, you know, if you're going down a path and you come up on a snake getting ready to eat a baby bunny, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm gonna do my best to pick up that baby bunny and say to that snake, you've got to look somewhere else for your lunch. And this person was, you know, baiting me, obviously. Why else would we be having this conversation? And he said, you know, well, but you're not accepting life as it is because you're interfering. And I said, accepting life as it is includes me being there. So, if life didn't want that baby bunny to get out of the reach of that snake, I would have been on a different path.
Oh, okay. That's neat.
Yeah.
So if somebody's in front of me and they're willing to listen for 2 seconds, maybe there's something
exactly
that could
right.
be offered of support.
That's exactly right. And it can be what inspires us to continue to do the best that we can to make the possibility available to people.
Mm.
Right? It's, you don't have to believe that, for instance, I don't have to believe that it's wrong for people to be hungry in order to want to feed them.
Yeah.
So Gio Kennett had the best line. People are starving in Africa, and that's their karma. And if you don't do something about it, that's your karma.
Mm.
So we're
yes.
all here, we're all players, and we can play just as hard as we can play, knowing that we are playing. You know, that there isn't anything wrong. It's just our best opportunity to choose the highest consciousness that we can in each moment.
Yes, yep. And then a person is either going to, you know, they're going to do whatever or life is going to life whatever in that
right.
person.
I can't tell
yeah.
you the number of people I have met who have said, you know, somebody gave me one of your books 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, whatever. I didn't throw it away because it was a gift, but it sat there on the shelf, and then one day it just occurred to me to read it. Okay, there. Now, should
yeah.
person not have given them that book because they weren't really interested in reading it right then? We never know. So if I have an impulse to go in a certain direction, then I go in that direction, and with the spirit of inquiry, I watch and see what happens. And here's the other part that I think we always have to keep in mind. We don't know how the story ends.
Yeah. Yeah, like who knows what happens way down the road either way in someone's life or something like that, yeah.
Right, that's that image of we were probably all bugs around the outhouse of the Buddha.
I've never heard that one.
Lo, these many years later, practice.
Yeah, well, that's another, yeah, that's
there's
a whole
image.
Other thing. There's an image, yes, wow.
Okay.
Oh,
well, keep
yeah.
packing.
Thank you so much. I will keep packing.
We'll,
I will
we'll
see
you soon. Okay.
Thank you so,
again.
So much.
You're
Bye.
Welcome. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. What a pleasure, Sherry.
What a pleasure. Gosh. Thank you, Michael.
Oh, thank you.
Let's talk again soon, shall we?
Next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday. Sounds good. See you
Okay.
Next.
Talk to you then.
All right. Bye.
Bye.